Welcome back. Sounds of protest in Cairo this week, 2 years to the month from when the same sounds were heard during the Arab Spring that toppled President Hosni Mubarak. Violence flared up 5 days ago in other cities along the Suez Canal after young men involved in a soccer riot a year ago were convicted and sentenced to death. Now it's Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, who's imposing a state of emergency and curfews, much like Mubarak did when there was civil unrest. David Kirkpatrick has been describing it all for the New York Times. He's Cairo bureau chief for that paper. We spoke to him in Cairo, and he was saying that today in Cairo, people are kind of in shock as to what happened.
There were some events last night that have really thrown people for a loop here, including an attack on one of the nicest hotels in town, the Intercontinental Semiramis, which is usually extremely secure, right next to the American and the British embassies. Some kind of criminals apparently took advantage of the chaos to break into the lobby with guns to shoot it up and trash it. And the manager from inside the hotel was calling for help, calling the police who didn't respond, and then sending messages out by Twitter, and was eventually aided by a number of the protesters outside. And then the police arrived, they eradicated the criminals, and the protesters escorted all of the guests to another hotel. And that is, you know, it's criminality. It underscores really the complete collapse of the credibility of the security services, and beyond that, possibly the state here. And it's a blow to the tourist economy, which, while moribund at the moment, is normally the lifeblood of the Egyptian economy. It's a stunning moment.
Well, you just mentioned the possible collapse of the state. Do you mean that?
Not only do I mean it, the defense minister today warned of that in a statement. He said very pointedly that the political and social and economic problems around the country threaten the integrity of the state. And his point was that the military is still the backbone of the state and will stand behind it. It appeared to be not so much a threat. He's not so much saying we're going to have another military takeover, but I think he was quite pointedly trying to say to the civilian leadership here, time to get it together, guys. They keep pointing fingers at each other, and it's getting to be a crisis.
Well, we've seen security police chasing away the new interior minister, their boss, when he tried to attend a funeral on Friday. I mean, it just seems like complete chaos. Remind us, I mean, we mentioned these 21 soccer fans who were sentenced to death for that riot a year ago. But as you write, and as others have said, this has been sort of waiting to happen for 2 years. What's really behind this?
What's really behind this is it's a very difficult question to answer. You know, certainly in Port Said, people took to the streets because 21 of their young men were sent to death over the soccer riot 1 year ago. Beyond that, you know, what really animates their anger is anger at the police, a rage at the police, and at the courts. You know, the court that handed down that decision doesn't seem credible to them. It doesn't seem fair. It seems politicized. And they have reasons for that. The court system has been fairly politicized here, and it's handed down a whole bunch of clearly and obviously political rulings, including in the eyes of many Egyptians, letting off the perpetrators of the killings of civilians during the uprising against Hosni Mubarak. So
because
now comes this decision, and they're right not to believe it. And they're also justified in many ways in their anger at the police. And what really is getting under their skin is that these institutions, basically the structure of government, has not really changed. There have been a complicated series of transitions at the top, turning over power to a bunch of generals and then to the elected leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. But below that, the old state is still in place. And so in the minds of many people on the ground, it makes sense that the revolution should go on by increasingly violent means.
This is what
factor, of course, here is the general breakdown in security, which is, you know, it's kind of a green light for people who are inclined anyway to try to settle their disputes by violence.
This is what I was thinking, that, you know, as you write, there was a huge change, certainly in Egypt, but not in the court system, not in other systems that are still operating. So, and this brings us to President Morsi. People in Port Said want to break away from Egypt. They say that they don't recognize him as the president of Egypt, only the president of the Muslim Brotherhood. And he has, according to his detractors, pulled fast ones when it came to the passing of the country's constitution. But is he in an impossible position? Because when there are riots, you know, you have to impose some kind of order.
He is in many ways in an impossible position. I mean, let's be clear, there's no angels here. You know, everybody has some egg on their face. But certainly, if you start the clock today and you look at the situation that President Morsi is in, his credibility and the integrity of the state depends on enforcing the laws. At the same time, he has a police department that may or may not follow his orders, that may or may not follow the orders of its own interior minister, that is untrained, unsophisticated, and inclined to excessive use of force in the first place. How do you solve this? You don't have a good Western-style police force that can go in and say, okay, calm down, we're only going to arrest the perpetrators, everybody will have a fair trial, you know, we can settle this in a courtroom. But you don't have that at your disposal. So what do you do? When the police fails, you say, okay, state of emergency and a curfew. When that doesn't work and people disobey the curfew, you say, okay, I'm calling out the military. Yesterday he did that, and surprise, surprise, even after that, the people were still on the streets defying the curfew, defying the emergency law, and defying the military. I'm frankly curious myself to see how this situation will get resolved.
Well, I'm going to ask you to peer into your crystal ball because, as you write, you know, some of these protesters are now armed. That makes it a little bit different from 2 years ago. You know, we think of countries like Lebanon, like Libya, and you wonder if it's going in that direction. Certainly, people on the right here in the U.S. think that it was always a mistake to topple Mubarak. Do you think that that's the thinking now, or is this growing pains? What do you think this is?
I don't know, and I'll be frank with you. I have no idea. At the moment, it looks like there is a failure of leadership among the broader Egyptian political class, and that includes the Muslim Brotherhood as well as its opposition. You know, they're both sides are failing to come together, failing to address the situation, failing to speak with any real credibility to the people on the ground. You know, this isn't over. It may yet get resolved, and the military may have a card to play here because it not only retains the heavy weapons, it also retains a lot of prestige and credibility in the eyes of the Egyptian people. And so it may play a role here as a kind of broker or arbiter or influencer of the civilian government short of a full military coup. But I don't want to go too far in guessing what the next step is going to be.
Well, but you will be there when it happens. David Kirkpatrick, Cairo Bureau Chief of the New York Times, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
And by the way, we also asked David if he stands by his reporting on Benghazi. He'd reported that there were protesters as well as militants at the U.S. consulate. We'll have his answer tomorrow when we take a look at the expanded use of U.S. drones in North Africa. That's tomorrow. Up next, crawling through live wires for fun, here and now.